kids, and welcome back to the last episode of Underrated Pod before the year 2020. I told you we would do it, and we are doing it. We are ending season one of Warehouse 13 before the new year. Yes! Finish line in sight. Before we get to that review, I just want to thank you again for spending your time with me, and also for interacting on Twitter, or Facebook, or Instagram, or emailing me. I really appreciate it, and it helps me stay in touch with folks. So, the joys of social media. If you don't follow me on any of those, you can find me on Twitter at _ratedpod, Facebook _ratedpod, Instagram _ratedpod, email at info.underrated@gmail.com. All those lovely ways to get in touch. You can also subscribe to the podcast on most podcatchers. Yeah, just choose your weapon for getting in touch with me. I love to interact with folks who want to talk about Warehouse 13 or nerdery or D&D. I'm all about it. All right, let's get into that penultimate episode, Nevermore. It was directed by Tanya, I'm just going to say that, McKiernan. That one I got. I'm a Mick. I can say it. And she has directed episodes of Supergirl, Black Lightning, NCIS, Criminal Minds. So girl has been around. The episode was written by David Simkins. We've seen him before. We'll see him again. So he's kind of old hat at that point. Previously on Warehouse 13, McPherson. And also Micah has daddy issues. And that's pretty much what you need to know going into this episode. We start in Colorado City, Colorado at Baring & Sons bookstore. If you don't remember, the Barings don't have any sons. They barely have Micah as a daughter. A man who is presumably Micah's dad gets a mysterious package that is a book wrapped in foil that we, viewers, might recognize from the warehouse. Cut to Berlin, where Micah is in McPherson's apartment and Pete is in Montreal chasing the actual McPherson. He gets to the end of an alleyway, classic chain link fence. McPherson knocks people out with finger symbols and gets away. Back at presumably Micah's dad's place, there is writing crawling up and down his arms from the book. And as far as I know, that is not normal. We're right, because he all of a sudden starts screaming. Micah's mom, Jeannie Baring, calls Micah, and Micah says that she's going home, folks. Over in Portland, Oregon, at the Kingford Academy for rich preppy kids, maybe that's just a judgment on my part, it's given a real Hogwarts vibe with uniforms and stone walls and all that kind of stuff. Greg, the bully, trips a mild-mannered nerd, and I'm sure that's fine and won't come back to bite him at all. Artie is explaining to Lena about McPherson and all that, but surprise, it's Mrs. F, and she is pissed. Because Artie went off after McPherson without a plan. And we know Mrs. F is ticked off because we can actually see an expression on CCH Pounder's face. She tells Artie to manage my assets better, which is, number one, possessive, but also intimidating. Back at school, the nerd, Bobby, hears whispering from an Edgar Allan Poe display. That's normal. After class, the overinvolved English instructor gives Bobby a book of poetry. That's cool and not creepy at all. Please, please do not involve yourself in your students' affairs like that. If he wants to ask a girl out, he'll ask her out. And he also didn't bring it up, so I'm gonna need you to back off. This is not Dead Poet Society. In Colorado, it is Micah's dad, and he's fine. Everyone is just overreacting to the words crawling on his skin and screaming. And yes, thank you very much, Dad. My gun is downstairs and disassembled in my luggage. You know, Micah, gun safety is important. And Micah's dad says that he doesn't know what all the fuss is about. He says fuss, but we know what word he actually wants to say there. All of a sudden, Pete walks in, and Micah's dad calls him a pip. Well, Micah is shocked. Apparently, Pete got there as support for Micah and has been making friends with Jeannie and Warren, as we will come to find out is Micah's dad's name. In the, 2 minutes that we've seen Micah and her dad interact, he has called her too skinny on numerous occasions. He's teased her about being Miss Independent, Miss Touchy, and that she wasted her trip. Thanks, Dad. Love you too. Pete kind of scolds Micah for not telling her parents that she no longer works in DC, and Micah, rightfully so, I think, says to Pete, what am I supposed to do? Tell them that I work for the World's Most Dangerous Antiques Roadshow? Another great nickname for the warehouse. And she explains that lying keeps her dad from being disappointed. I don't know about your family dynamics, but that made a lot of sense to me, where, I don't know, kind of growing up, you learn to lie so that you don't have to explain yourself. And it's nothing big like, oh, yeah, I failed out of school. Although, side note, that's a storyline in The Heights, a wonderful musical by Lin-Manuel. But also, I mean, it's just little stuff that, oh, what'd you do? Nothing. Like, just keeps everyone happy and moving along. If you come from a well-adjusted family and you don't understand that impulse, I commend you and I'm happy for you. Warren goes back down to the basement and starts reading that Fakakta book again. Not sure why. This scene is overlapped with Bobby at school breaking into the Edgar Allan Poe display, in case you didn't see that coming. And he grabs Edgar Allan Poe's pen, which causes Warren to scream and then pass out. They find him, and Pete tosses the book out of Warren's hands. It gives a little bit of a spark. In the fastest commute ever, Claudia shows up at the bookstore, and Jeannie starts demanding answers from Claudia, who is very awkward and is like, nope, I gotta go. And Micah asks her mom to trust her, that this is her job and she knows what she's doing. Unfortunately for Micah, the goo canister that Claudia brought is a no-go, and the notebook just turns the goo to ink. Apparently, the notebook is part of a bifurcated object, which means there are at least two pieces to it, possibly more. Artie's guess is that a pen goes with the book. Makes sense. Everyone guesses that McPherson is the one who sent it, and Artie says not to jump to conclusions, but the show being what it is, we can pretty much assume that that's right. And just for safety measures, Artie has sent people to watch Joshua, Claudia's brother, and Pete's family. I guess at this point they hadn't decided all the members of Pete's family yet. They've barely decided the members of the Baring family right now, so let's just leave it at quote-unquote Pete's family is being watched. They get a hit as to where Poe's pen is, and Pete asks Micah to stay behind with her dad and the notebook because she's supposed to be reading to him and keeping him grounded in reality. Joe and Kelly's face makes a particularly poignant journey here. Maybe I was reading too much into it, but I really think it comes across in her acting that you can see how Micah wants to stay, but she also wants to go and complete the mission because there is a part of her that knows staying is going to be awkward because her family is awkward, but she also knows that staying would be a good thing. And I think that that comes across. I think that comes across in Joanne's face. I know people have had issues with her acting before, but like I said, I think when she's given a chance to explore some emotions, she actually does a good job of it. Lo and behold, she's an actor. Pete, in true Big Brother form, ends this touching moment by making a joke saying that he has the hots for her mother. Micah says that she'll break it to her dad. The joke makes her smile, though, so mission accomplished there, Pete. Back in over-involved English teacherville, Mr. Ives, the instructor, asks Bobby about the Poe pen. Bobby hands him a note that says wall, and which sends Mr. Ives into the wall of the bookcase, Cask of Amontillado style. I'm having a hard time imagining how this artifact works. Like, how did Bobby figure that out? Can you write anything? Does it just have to be one word? I don't know. Not a lot of explanation on that one. Claudia and Pete go to the school, the academy, so sorry, to figure out what's going on. Oh, I skipped the part where Bobby caused a fire in Greg the Bully's locker. So Pete and Claudia and the principal are at the locker, which, if you look, Greg has a picture of himself in his own locker. And I think we can all agree that he deserved to have flames on the side of his face, right? Just me? Okay, that's fine. Your mileage might vary on that one. Warren is talking to Micah, saying that if she had been a boy, that he would have named her Sue because of the Johnny Cash song to make her a tough guy. Micah apologizes for not being a boy, and Warren apologizes for not being a father. Kind of awkward. Not really sure where you're going with that whole boy named Sue thing, Warren, but fine, you're trying. Jeannie, meanwhile, says that Warren has regrets, that he wrote a novel over and over again. He wrote it 12 times and then finally told her to burn it because he just couldn't let go of it. Side note, looking at Claudia, she doesn't seem to have a stripe of color in her hair this episode. And I don't know if I said this when she first showed up, but I'm pretty sure that was an Allison Scagliotti addition to Claudia to put the streak of color in her hair. Not this time. I guess she's a serious field agent this time. So they find Ives in the wall. Good thing that mortar was really loose because Pete was able to just crowbar those bricks out. Micah finds Warren's novel in Aunt Cindy's bureau, and I just thought that was such a family thing because even if you don't have deep family history, there's always something, right? Whether it's an aunt's bureau, grandma's sweater, there's some family member who has left or given you something and it is in your house and the whole family knows about it and you just kind of skirt around it because it's there and a family member gave it to you, so you just kind of hang on to it. I just thought that was a nice little tidbit right there. Good old Aunt Cindy. Bobby goes up to his crush, Tamara, with a note that says mine. And again, really? Is that how this works? Whatever. It creates a zombified Tamara in a, I don't know, Juliet kind of getup. And then when Pete and Claudia are trying to stop Bobby and Tamara, Bobby does pit and pendulum them. So these words are a mixture of Poe writing and not. Does Bobby have to know about Poe's writings to be able to make it work? Again, this artifact is a little flip-floppy for me. Micah starts reading Warren's book to him. It's called Blue Willow Sky, which sounds like a Willa Cather novel. So kudos, Warren, for capturing the Great Plains. And the opening lines of the novel are about a father's fear for his daughter and about how he now has to protect her. Very touchy-feely, very on point. Micah reading this causes Bobby to drop the pen, and it starts kind of disintegrating the pit and the pendulum aspects of it. So just enough for Claudia to snag and bag the pen, but Bobby and Warren are still being affected by it. So Pete takes the bagged pen up and apparently runs to Colorado Springs because in the next scene, he just shows up at the bookstore. Very quick travel on these in this episode. Reunification of the objects causes Warren to snap out of it. All the ink kind of gets sucked out of his body. It's a good effect, I think. Warren then compliments Micah on her job and says that they should talk for real about more than books. Side note, another hair side note, I think Joanne Kelly's hair looks really good in this episode. I thought the last episode, it looked like maybe the humidity had gotten to it. Her curls are kind of an up and down roller coaster. Sometimes they know what to do with them. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they decide to just flat iron it. Keep a watch on Joanne Kelly's hair. Maybe we'll have a curl watch. I don't know. Like a surfer. Pete gets a vibe about her parents, Micah's parents, and so they go back into the bookstore and McPherson is back using Jack the Ripper's lantern against the bearings. Hello, Tess. And he manages to trade Micah's parents' lives for the Poe artifacts. And that's pretty much how this episode ends. Few tidbits about this episode. Again, people really don't like McPherson as a villain, and I don't know if it's because of Roger Reese's face and or accent, but I thought this episode really kind of ramped up the threat that McPherson poses. And I thought that was good. I mean, that's kind of what you want out of your big bad villain, right? I love a character study. And I am glad that Micah got some more meat to sink her teeth into. Joanne Kelly got a chance to emote a little bit more. But I did think that there could have been more done between the bearings without artifact interference. If we had actually gotten into some of the issues, it kind of gets swept under the rug a little bit and a little bit too neat with a bow tied on it for my likes. You know, Warren was basically passed out for the whole thing. And so, you know, if they had had to address some of the issues that they've had over the years, that might have actually caused some resolve, but that's fine. It's a step. Just one little production note. The actors who played the Barings are actually married. They are Michael and Susan Hogan, and they are the actual parents of the actor who plays Sam Martino. So they are related to a character on Warehouse 13, just not Micah Baring. Weird. Life, man. And that brings us to the finale. It's almost over. All right, nerds, we made it to the last episode. Episode 12, MacPherson, directed by Steven Sergic, written by showrunner Jack Kenny. We've seen these names before. We'll see them again. We have made it. If you count the pilot as two episodes, this is actually episode 13. See what they did there? No skipping that floor for them. It all comes together. Previously on Warehouse 13, MacPherson is a bad guy, and Claudia is new to the team, so we're not really sure about her motives. And that's what you missed. We open with a flashback to a house on fire from 15 years ago, where Artie and MacPherson are arguing in front of it. Artie won't let MacPherson save, quote-unquote, her, not sure who that is yet, at the cost of other people's lives. And MacPherson, here's his big thesis, says that he's done with the warehouse because the warehouse sits on these artifacts, has these wonderful things that can save the world, and they don't do anything. They just sit there in their bureaucracy with the powers that be, and they choose not to save people when they can. MacPherson Tesla's Artie grabs the Phoenix coin from Artie's hand, runs into the building, and comes back out with a woman. And we find out that this is Caroline, or Carol, as she is called for the rest of the episode. It zaps back into present day at the B&B, where Mrs. F is telling this story to our intrepid team. She explains that 5 firemen died in that fire, and that actually MacPherson married Carol. But because of that, he was banished from Warehouse 13 and sentenced to 5 years confinement. He escaped after 2. With some arty exposition back at the warehouse with Claudia, we learn that the walls of the warehouse are infused with a mineral pinite, and that MacPherson was injected with a substance that reacts quite violently to that mineral. And by violent, he means it turns the blood to acid and eats through a person's veins. Neat! Claudia, through her internetting and hackery, finds out that Poe's pen is actually up for sale. I doubt that's on eBay. There's probably some dark website that she is surfing. Artie does something and sets off some virus, cyber babble something. She basically shuts down the computers and Claudia has to hack back in to their own system. In DC, MacPherson is meeting with potential buyers of other artifacts, and as a show and tell, he gives the Phoenix coin to one of the goons and then shoves him into a furnace that they just happen to be standing in front of. You know, like you do at a factory. And the guy walks back out of the furnace unharmed, but then 2 other goons start to choke and fall to the ground. And we learn that when the Phoenix saves someone, someone else has to die. Someone who has not touched it. The Phoenix coin is actually made of clay, and Jack Kenny has it. He has a lot of artifacts. I guess as a showrunner, you can just take things. That's fine. And that brings us to the titles. In this scene after the titles, we find out that Claudia is 19. And I just think that's interesting because Allison Scagliotti actually is or was 19 thereabouts when this was airing. So that's how rare to find a teenager playing a teenager. Other people's ages, Eddie McClintock was around 40, Joanne was around 30, and Saul Rubinick was about 60. CCH Pounder, she's ageless. Pete and Micah and Artie then go to DC as well to speak to Carol. Apparently, Carol has been hanging out with McPherson. While the A-team is away, Claudia gets to hang out with Mrs. F, nervously. It turns out that Carol had been hanging out with McPherson as soon as 3 days ago. Through some Googling and Micah's crack observation skills, they produce a JM business card, and Artie notices that the card has the Egyptian symbol, Waz Scepter, which means power. Apparently pharaohs used to carry it around as a show of power of some sort. When they are leaving Carol's, Pete gets a vibe about Artie. He's not sure what, but he just gets a vibe. At Warehouse 13, Claudia and Lena are at the computer trying to figure out McPherson's game, and Claudia sees a picture of McPherson for the first time, and it turns out that McPherson was actually Josh's physics professor, and he also just so happened to help Claudia hack into the warehouse firewall. This background makes sense because, if you'll remember, Claudia knew Artie as well because he was posing as a professor as well. So I kind of wonder what Artie and McPherson were up to as co-professors, or what Artie was professor of. Maybe they said, but I don't remember. But I just think it's interesting. And again, I'm sure there's some fanfic out there about their time as professors, because of course there is. Pete, Micah, and Artie track down the factory where McPherson was hosting these potential buyers, and they get whammied by the bald one. They, all three of them, get deafened by the goblet of Severin, while the bald baddie gets away. Artie cures the deafening with a tuning fork, which apparently Saul Rubinick broke when he first used it. Micah finds a box with the same scepter symbol that the business card had, and it opens by using the necklace that Carol was wearing that Artie took from her when they left. How rude, but how convenient. In the box is a pair of glasses with basically a catalog of the auction items, and the auction is today. I think these glasses look good on everyone, but far be it for me. I once owned a pair of glasses that looked good on literally everyone. It didn't matter the coloring, the face shape, anything like that. They just looked good on everyone. They were like the jeans in Sisterhood of Traveling Pants. Everyone could wear them. I wonder whatever happened to those glasses. Huh. Anyways, the team pretty much figures that the auction is a trap, but they go anyways. Pete and Micah won't let Artie leave them out of this one. Lena asks Mrs. F if McPherson could still be using Claudia as a pawn, and Mrs. F isn't sure about that. She goes to make sure that the Phoenix coin is still at the warehouse, but it's gone! And now she's getting angry. And we don't like Mrs. F when she's angry. The Goblet of Severin is also gone, and the video display shows that Claudia is the one who accessed these artifacts last. Bum bum bum. The field team is tracking down this auction, and Pete actually makes a history reference. Way to go, Pete. See, he's more than just jokes. The glasses, it turns out, are a replica pair of Timothy Leary's glasses, and those will come back. They are also Jack Kenny's glasses. So if you see pictures from Jack Kenny at this time, he's wearing, basically, an artifact. Through some puzzle solving, they find a ladder which leads to an underground, what can only be described as lair, that is full of Warehouse 13 boxes. Artie splits the group, and as Pete and Micah find the group of buyers, Artie walks up and greets them as friends. Oh no! Plot twist! The real Artie comes up behind Pete and Micah as they puzzle it together, and Micah calls out that Harriet Tubman's thimble can make people look like other people. Artie says, "You really did read the whole manual, didn't you?" And she very proudly says that she did. It's one of Micah's shining moments. Claudia is defending herself to Lena and Mrs. F, and she says that this place is my home, which is just heart-crushing because if you think of Claudia's background, she lost her brother, she was put in an asylum, she was trying to piece together all these threads, and nobody took her seriously. Everybody thought she was crazy, and it's just happening again. And it's, we learn that she's 19. Think back to when you were 19, or maybe you're there now. It's really hard to have people not trust you and not believe in you or believe the words that you're saying. And I think her age probably acts against her in this one, even though she's proven herself a capable team member. The fact that she's new and young is working against her this time. When the A-team splits up again, McPherson gets to Artie, and then in a disturbing scene, pulls him out using a metal choke chain, basically, that you would use, that some people would use on a dog. And Artie has an eggshell bomb in his mouth. It's very, very disturbing for me. I mean, I'm not shaming any kinks here. If that's your thing, go for it. But I'm not sure that Artie, in this instance, is a willing participant. And consent is the name of the game. So McPherson monologues to Pete about maybe artifacts do belong in the world. Maybe the warehouse shouldn't be sitting on all this useful history. In a very who watches the Watchmen monologue, who has the ultimate authority, superheroes, who gives them the right, who keeps them in check, all that kind of good stuff. I have to admit, it's a fair point, which is what makes McPherson, I think, a decent villain, especially for a season one villain. You have an old adversary who knows personal buttons to push, and he also kind of has a point, which makes for compelling television. Pete doesn't buy it. He tells McPherson to basically shove it, and Pete throws down a shard from the Goblet of Severin. Micah catches the bomb as Artie spits it out, and McPherson falls to the ground. The car ride back to Warehouse 13 was done all on blue screen, and I think it looks pretty good. Again, trying to remember that this is basically filmed in 2008 on a sci-fi channel budget, which I can't imagine is very large. I mean, it's just basic internet, or it's just basic cable, right? So I think it looks good. We learn that McPherson is going into the Bronze Sector. New Warehouse 13 section alert, the Bronze Sector. Apparently, this is the section where the most dangerous people are preserved. When they get to the warehouse, Mrs. F greets them, and she has a necklace with crystalline diamonds that contain a trace of palladium, which apparently neutralizes the reagent in McPherson's blood so he can go into the warehouse without exploding or burning his own veins. In kind of a really clever bit of writing, Artie and McPherson explain to Micah and Pete the Bronze Sector and how it was first explored in Mesopotamia in 1230, according to Artie, but McPherson corrects him and says 1250 BC. And you get to see that McPherson probably was a really good agent. He's smart. He knows the history. Artie and McPherson make a good team. You can see echoes of Pete and Micah finishing each other's sentences, thinking along the same lines. And so I just think it's a really clever way to sneak in some echoes of the team that Artie and McPherson used to be without having to go into a whole flashback scene or anything like that. It's a good way to do it without exposition, is what I'm saying. Pete and Micah leave to help Lena put the artifacts back up on the shelves, and McPherson tries one more time to convince Artie that this isn't the right tack to take and that he is pleading for Artie's life, not his own. I think they wrote McPherson pretty well. That is just kind of a sleazy, smarmy, villainous thing to say that I'm not doing this for me, I'm doing this for you. We then see Claudia leaving the B&B with her backpack, and we assume she's leaving for good. Lena goes to check on Artie, and then we see someone reverse bronzing McPherson, and the camera cuts away, and it's Claudia. And then Claudia and McPherson get to the office at the warehouse, and surprise, Claudia was actually Lena wearing the Harriet Tubman's thimble. Oh no, Lena! You're so nice! When Lena leaves, Roger Reese apparently ad-libbed the line Tempest Fugit, and I just think that is so British, just to sneak in some Latin there. I think that's amazing. everybody starts getting vibes that something is wrong. Artie goes to the office, tracks down McPherson, and tries to Tesla him, but it doesn't have any effect. McPherson locks down the warehouse and runs down the umbilical cord with Artie chasing after him. When McPherson gets outside, he starts the self-destruct sequence, and Artie apparently blows up along with the umbilical cord. As the explosion goes off, McPherson walks away, putting on sunglasses like a boss. And the season ends with Pete and Micah standing and looking out at a charred umbilicus with no Artie and no way out of the warehouse, seemingly. Personally, I think this is a good season one finale. The first half of the season has been really formulaic, just getting to know the characters, and then we finally start to introduce this big bad into the season in McPherson. He's a real threat. He clearly has a long game because he wanted to come to the warehouse for something, and he escaped. He escaped using another member of the warehouse team. So he can clearly manipulate people, and he has a plan in mind. A villain with a plan is a dangerous thing. I think this is when Warehouse 13 is at its best, is when it's dealing with overarching themes. Obviously, not everything has to be connected. That's not how life works, but this is a show, and so instead of using the formula of snag, bag, tag, one artifact per episode, it's nice when the stakes are higher and the villains bigger and badder. One thing that always sticks in my mind, Robert Tappert from Xena, he said during one commentary on an episode that you make your heroes big and your villains bigger because it gives your heroes something to overcome. We love when the heroes are successful, but we don't want it to be easy for them. Part of what we like is seeing them struggle and overcome these circumstances. And so I think McPherson is a good big bad for this first time out and this new team. So I'm excited to get into season two because I think it just ramps up from here and they just get better and stronger and the writing and the characters get better and we learn more about the warehouse and I'm excited to start exploring that more. I do want to leave you with an artifact for this week, and I thought it would be neat to go back to Alessandro Volta because we saw Claudia use his lab coat before, and so he has another artifact in the warehouse, and it's actually his biscuit tin. Now, Alessandro Volta is credited with inventing the battery, and so this biscuit bin is actually used to store energy using a living host. It will come up again. I don't want to talk about it because it's from the season that should not exist, but I just thought it was neat in talking about Nevermore with a bifurcated object or with a bifurcated artifact that Alessandro Volta has two separate artifacts connected to him. And when you think about artifacts are the mixture of strong emotions, strong personality, strong moment, it's, I think, interesting that Volta would have two artifacts credited to his name. I just want to leave you with that. Slight housekeeping note, I think next time I'm going to do a season one kind of retrospective. So if you have questions or comments or anything about season one that I didn't cover or anything that you want to ask me about Warehouse 13 that's not too spoilery, I would love to hear from you. Tweet at me, email me, and I will include it in the next episode. So again, remember to rate and subscribe, and I will see you next year! You know I had to fit in a dad joke. Peace, nerds. Who's a good girl? That's a good girl.